This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 261 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So announcements this week. I don't know if we said this last week or not, but we have an official start date of November 4th as the first episode of season 4. And Stars has officially announced the lineup for their Outlander appearance at New York Comic Con. And I think it's got Ron and Meryl, and I saw Sam and Katrina and Richard and Sophie. I think that's what the lineup looks like this year.
Cool. Sounds like fun. I bet Comic-Con, I bet that's going to be a great panel.
There should be a lot of fun stuff coming out of it. All right. And now on to our read-along. This week, we will be continuing our Drums of Autumn read-along with chapter 43 entitled Whiskey in a Jar. And I think the subtitle to this chapter would be Bree missed the opportunity to have created the Heimlich Remover. Because
to have it named after herself.
Exactly. She should have been like, oh, that's the Fraser maneuver or the Randall Fraser maneuver. Because frankly, and she didn't even claim it for herself. She's just like, my mom told me. So she gave it to Claire. So now Claire could very well call it. She can't call it the Heimlich maneuver. I don't know. Missed opportunities, man.
She could. Who knows? She could have met a German over in Europe.
But then there is a possibility of it. There's a possibility of it showing up in newspapers or something written down prior to its invention. Anywho.
That's true. If you're going to do it early, don't use the real name. So Claire isn't happy with the way Ronnie Sinclair was looking at Bree. So they're all down at the Cooper shop, which is Ronnie's shop, and they're putting in their orders for casks for whiskey, like not for whiskey itself, but casks for the whiskey and a barrel for Claire and them for smoked salmon. Now, before we go any further, I was reminded of something. We're introduced, I think we hear about him before, but Ronnie Sinclair is in this chapter, you know, pretty strongly in the beginning. And I remember wondering, like, why, what, not, maybe not what made the name Sinclair Spanish, Scottish, or whatever it was. And it reminded me, before I give it away, let me ask you. So Summer, Sinclair obviously is S-I-N, pronounced Sin. How would you pronounce this name? S-A-I-N-T space dash whatever, J-E-A-N.
Well, okay. See, I have a lot of feelings about that, and I'll tell you why.
Do you know where I'm going?
Well, wait for it. Okay. Because I read a lot of books growing up where there were people who were named St. John, which is not a bastardization, but a nickname for St. Joan or St. John. And then it becomes St. John. So Sin, so what you said was Saint Jean, which would become Saint Jean, which could then become St. John. I don't know.
Okay, so you are on the right path. You're absolutely correct. It is St. John, but it's not a you're right. It's not a bastardization. It's not a nickname. It is actually the pronunciation. It's very common in the UK. I never heard it growing up, like ever. We don't hear it here, I don't think, with our American ears, right? If you and I saw someone's last name is S-T space C-L-A-I-R or E, we would say St. Clair, right?
Yeah.
St. John. We would just, that's just us and that's us. So yeah, the first time, and I don't know that I ever absorbed it or heard about it or thought about it that way in the way you described it. Just from reading, because when you read, okay, obviously, if you see Sinclair, like we did in this chapter, S-I-N, you're going to say sin, and you probably don't put it together with saint. But you only know, unless you know how a certain community or the community of where the book came from, like if it's a British author and you're reading the book, obviously, in English, but it's a British author and you're an American, then you wouldn't know that it's meant to be St. John or whatever. Sinclair, you know, because it's not, it's spelled the way it sounds. However, that has changed. So yeah, so I was like, I remember the first time I heard about St. John or something to that effect. And I was like, what? That is the most, I almost said a word, not a bad word, but a not kind word. That is the wackiest, most ridiculous thing I've heard. Mm-hmm. Can people not pronounce? It's like, what is this? No, it's just, and it's not bad. We're all ignorant. Ignorance is not bad. There are many things that we're ignorant of. It's when we refuse to learn or refuse to, you know, do better when we know better, whatever that phrase is. That whole thing. So I didn't know. And that's why I judged it, or I heard it and I was like, oh, that is just wrong. Well, coming as from a native speaker of American English, coming from my ear, it sounded wrong, right? It sounds like, oh, right? What the heck? Blue Apron delivers farm fresh ingredients and step-by-step recipes to your door. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone.
Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs.
Now, they have quick and easy recipe options, perfectly portioned ingredients that are delivered right to your door. And you'll, I think, appreciate it because the recipes are delicious. Very good quality ingredients, and there's a little bit of prep, but it's kind of an experience. It's not necessarily fast food, but everything is measured out. Everything is ready and prepackaged. Literally, all you have to do is unwrap it, unroll it, whatever it is.
And dice it.
Do your mise en place and go.
And these ingredients are going to be seasonally inspired. So you're not going to be getting hothouse strawberries in the middle of winter. You're not going to be getting zucchini in the middle of winter. It's right now, it's like peak zucchini season. So you're going to be getting a lot of zucchini. And I'm excited that we've hit like the turning point of the corn season. So I'm seeing a lot more corn options. I'm very into corn. And they have chef designed recipes and exciting partnerships like Bob's Burgers and MasterChef. And I'm excited to see Whole30 back in the rotation.
I am looking forward to, I got a delivery this week, and again, vegetarian that I am, they will cater to vegetarians as well. Crispy cheese quesadillas with poblano pepper and queso blanco. Hello. Yummo. Did I say yummo? Because yummo.
I am personally super excited about, like I said earlier, there's corn. I have corn in my future. I'm very excited about it. Spicy glazed chicken and honey butter corn with coleslaw and crispy onions. Yes, please. Yummo.
So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free at blueapron.com/outlander. That's blueapron.com/outlander to get your first three meals free.
Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Well, yeah. So the first time I heard about it or heard of it was watching some British show, I'm sure. And it's not even a long time ago. We're talking like in the last 5 years. So it definitely was not growing up. It was in the last like few years watching something probably on Netflix. I don't know. So I wanted to see, since St. John is pronounced like the sin in Sinclair, but it's not spelled differently. So the sound of that or the pronunciation of that has morphed, but the spelling or the writing has not morphed. Whereas with Sinclair or St. Clair, that has morphed both orthographically in writing as well as in, I guess you call it, you can't say audio. So while one has changed both orthographically as well as orally, pronunciation-wise, phonetically, I guess, the other has only changed phonetically and not orthographically. And I thought there has to be, if there are two of them that are not identical, but they have a similar root in that they both involve the word saint, right? I'm like, that has to have a name, that has to be called something. And of course it is. Now, I did not find anything that gave me like an exhaustive list or an explanation. of how it changed, but by Googling kind of like circumlocution, like I don't know what it's called, so I had to type in all these crazy descriptions of words that are spelled like this but sound like this. It was really ridiculous. But I found a study called On the Origin of, I am going to probably bastardize this, but, or really butcher this. One of the things I learned when I was studying in Scotland, because I hadn't studied saints' lives before, or a lot of history that had to do with the saints, Catholic saints. And one of the words I came across and heard and used then very frequently was hagiography. Now, if I saw that, it's H-A-G-I-O-G-R-A-P-H-Y, the study of saints, basically, saints' lives. As an American, even if I studied the exact same thing but studied it here in America, I would have seen that and said hagiography, right? Maybe hagiography, but probably hagiography. But since I was in the UK, and that's where I heard it first, obviously the pronunciation that I internalized and then used and still thus have is hagiography. So a hard G instead of a soft G, like we normally would pronounce it a soft G because of the I. But I say hagiography. So because of hagiography, I now pronounce this new term I learned as a hagionym. Now, if that is incorrect, if any Brits want to correct me, or if they're, I'd love to hear from any Americans who do study any kind of ancient literature or, sorry, medieval literature or hagionyms, however, I want to know how you guys pronounce it. So anyway, this study that I found is called On the Origin of Hagionyms in North American French Surnames. So one of the things that I didn't put two and two together with or note, although it was blatantly obvious in the two examples I thought of, was that both examples were French. So Saint-Jean and Saint or Sainte-Claire, right? So those are both French names. And then, of course, Saint in French, Saint would be the male and Sainte is the feminine male, the masculine and the feminine. The E on the end makes the T slightly pronounced. And either way, Saint, right? You don't pronounce the T, but it's nasalized. I could see, especially if you're getting away from the nasal, how you say, you know, over time could be sin. Or even if you pronounce it, St. John, St. John, St. John, St. Clair. See what I'm saying? St. Clair, St. Clair. Like you kind of drop the T. So however it happens, whether it's through the French influence or it's completely from English pronunciation influence, but it just happens to be French saints' names. I find it fascinating. And I found other examples or names in this study, but it wasn't what I was looking for, because I was looking for names that were saints' names that also were pronounced in this manner. But the study is actually about the origin of these names. So names where saints lived or areas that were named for them. Okay, so I will share that in the show notes. So that was a good few minutes going off kind of on topic, but sideways. So let's get back to the chapter. So I had to talk about that at the top because it would sound really odd, you know, coming at the end. So back to Ronnie Sinclair. So Sinclair is an example of a hagionym, which is the name of a saint. Hagia is from Greek. It means holy, just like sanctus. The saint is from sancta or sanctus in Latin, which means holy. Okay, so Claire is not happy with the way Sinclair was looking at Brie. They're putting their orders in for these casks for whiskey and a barrel for smoked meat. And apparently Ronnie is kind of giving Brie what, the googly eye?
He was definitely checking her out in a way that made everyone uncomfortable. especially like, since when everyone left, he started drawing dirty pictures of her as inspiration.
Yeah. Okay, let's not give the goods away. That's later potato.
It's okay. He's gonna draw the goods.
Do you prefer potato or tomato
for eating or
neither to be called?
Yeah, I think you can do better.
Neither. No, I could, but this is a family show. No, it's not a family show. Okay. I haven't even drunk anything. This is outrageous. Megan P. writes, Claire is always so mercurial in the way she can go from disliking someone to feeling sympathy for them in the span of just a few minutes, like she did with Ronnie Sinclair in this chapter. It makes her character so fun to read about because you never know what you're going to get from page to page. And of course, Megan is referring to Claire is not being happy with the way that she hasn't talked about him being alone. So I can't read it.
Hasn't talked about who being alone?
Claire didn't defend Ronnie until the end of the chapter, until they leave.
No, but she talked about it. She didn't defend him, but she talked about it.
Oh, right at the same time?
She mentioned it. In the beginning, yeah, because she's like, I didn't like the way he was looking at her, but I could hardly blame him because there was there's very few women.
Ronnie asks Claire if Jamie will be coming back down. And she says, no, he's got to bring in the barley. And she asks why. And he says, oh, likely it's nothing, only that I've heard a stranger in the district asking questions about Jamie Fraser, unquote. Ah, who might that be? Quote, from the corner of my eye, I saw Brianna's head snap around, distracted at once from her inspection of the spokeshavers, mallets, saws, and axes on the wall, unquote. She asks him if he knew the stranger's name and what he looked like. Ronnie doesn't know the name, but he said that the man gave his name as Hodgepile. Now, Roger wouldn't have any need for a false name, and they know this, and Ronnie hadn't heard of the name Wakefield. But he says, look, you're good to go. I've already been schooled by himself. If I hear a whisper of someone's name Wakefield, I'm to come up to get you guys or to tell you right away. Or if he's here, bring him up. Brianna is getting understandably worried. It's mid-October. It's now been at least a month or so. Has it been 2 months? Was it the case in September? And it's now mid-October. So it's been probably about a month. And fall is there and winter is looming. So the longer he takes, the more likely it is that something bad has happened to him. And then we learn that Hodgepile was asking about the whiskey too. Quote, in Cross Creek, no one would say a word to him, of course, but the one who told me did say as to the one who spoke to the man, thought him a soldier, unquote. Of course, this means a redcoat. So this man walked like a soldier, though he claimed to be a fur trader. And Claire and them think it's probably one of Murchison's men. Let me get another fateful line. Quote, I left the cooper's shop with Brianna, wondering just how much this Hodgepile might prove to be, unquote. Don't forget the word Hodgepile. If it's just something in passing and not important, as we say, maybe not all the time, but some of the time, we probably won't, hopefully don't bring our and your attention to it. And neither, more importantly, does Diana. But if a specific name, especially someone you don't know, is brought up several times, especially in the same number of pages, it might be something to just keep in the back of your mind for later. So Diana does like to put in things like that. And then Brianna uses logic to disabuse herself of the notion that this stranger, whoever he is, would likely be any danger. Their remoteness was one of the reasons, the remoteness of the ridge, was one of the reasons that Jamie had chosen to settle there. Quote, the multiple inconveniences of remoteness would be outweighed by its benefits when it came to war. No battle would be fought on Fraser's Ridge. I was sure of that, unquote. Of course, this is still in Claire's mind. So she's right. No battles will be fought on Fraser's Ridge. But the inconveniences she's speaking of course, are exactly what they're doing now, like having to go, I don't even know, a day's ride, a half a day's ride, whatever it is, either like 2 days or a week or whatever it is to get into Cross Creek, further to get to River Run. Just they're not close to anything really, really convenient. There's no corner drugstore. Let's put it that way. Lizzie and young Ian were outside of the shop waiting and gathering kindling from the rubbish heap. Claire looks at Lizzie in the sunlight to check her health, and she sees that the yellow tinge of jaundice had mostly faded. Her glands were less swollen as well, and it was her first time outside, out of doors, since they arrived at the cabin. Lizzie asks if they could also ask for a word of her father. He'd gone as a bondsman to the southern colonies. And Claire says, of course, they'll tell Ronnie to keep an eye out for him if he hears any or sees anything about him. Bree returns from the shop, now red-faced. She's either angry or embarrassed. We don't know which yet. And she doesn't tell young Ian what the matter is. She says she just wants to leave. So they load up the wagon and she takes the reins of the mules. Claire's like, okay, what's going on here? Claire asks what happens. And Bree says he hadn't done anything to her. But when she'd gone in, she'd interrupted him, she says, drawing pictures on a piece of wood. Pictures of naked women.
Old school porn.
Summer. Bless her heart, Claire is pragmatic. She's like, well, he hasn't got a wife and not likely to get one soon. Women are very scarce in the colony generally and even more so up here.
I just want to know if he's a good artist.
I suppose one can't blame him. Like, is it... Unquote.
Is it like a stick figure with like boobies? Like extra circles at the top? I mean...
It was good enough that she recognized it for what it was. So it must have been decent.
Well, it had... Okay.
Not good. I mean, I guess anyone could recognize a stick figure with two boobies, but that's, I mean, who knows? I feel bad for the dude, the fictional dude.
Well, yes and no. I mean, that's kind of, you got to save that stuff for your, you know, you don't do that in your shop.
Well, you can if you're alone.
I don't care if you think you're alone.
Okay.
I guess, but you or your shop is a public space, so people are always coming in, right? You hope people are always coming in. I mean, that seems like something you would do in your
in
off
your
season.
Off, or is he just like, season?
I need to commit this. I did say off season.
What is that? I don't even know what that is.
Hard-ons are seasonal. No, but what I mean is the only reason I could think that he was like, I have to do this right now is like, I don't want to forget what I just saw. Oh, and I want to capture that's this true. While it's
again,
fresh in my memory.
As Claire said, women are scarce out there. Even the ones that come around or don't come around. So this entered my brain as soon as you said what you said, I was like, this is the theme song. Dun, dun, dun. I think we're alone now. Okay, that was really too low. I think we're alone now. The dun, 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 dun is the only sound. That's Tiffany, right?
Really? That's all the words
beating
you know to
of
that?
Beating of a heart is the only sound. Children behave. Be careful what you ask for, Summer. That's what they say when we're together.
Really?
Yes. What? Watch what you say. Oh, no. How you say?
That's not the words either. Nope, that's wrong too. My point is the biggest part of that song that everyone knows is the chorus, which is, I think we're alone now. There doesn't seem to be anyone around. And what you did was, I think we're alone now. Da 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 da. Anyone around. Like, seriously. You stop it.
Oh,
I'm
gosh.
Begging you.
I think, unless something else comes up, I think this episode needs to be, I think we're, or da 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 da. No, I can't. You know, every time, okay, you guys, in case you didn't know, because we haven't taken a lot of pictures, but in case you knew or didn't know, we record remotely in separate places with dynamic mics, wearing headphones so we prevent audio leakage and echo and all of that stuff. Fun times. Well, it's not a big one or a bad one, but there's like a fraction of a second delay from my mic to my earphones, and it doesn't affect the recording at all, or else Summer would hear it. But so when I whenever I laugh, and of course I have a slightly high-pitched laugh, in case you didn't know, I'll do the laugh that I'm thinking of. And Summer, I can't believe you've never called me on this ever. Or if you thought it, you haven't called me on it. So what does this remind you of?
I don't know. What, Mickey Mouse?
Oh my God. Whatever I hate. Huh, what? No, it reminds me of... Okay, this is what it reminds me of.
I'm like, if you're just going to make the noise again, it's not going to remind me of it because I still don't know what it is.
No, there's something part of the noise that I'm not doing. I'm going to do the noise with the part that's missing. Why? type out. No. Nope. That's what I hear every time.
I don't. I refuse to put that in my brain.
Bless you. Your luck. Okay, good. So pretend that you didn't hear that. So you guys, I no, we're not going to call it wipeout. We'll call it.
Please stop. That's what we'll call it. We'll call it the please stop laugh.
Please stop what?
That laugh. Every time you make that laugh, we'll call it a please stop.
Oh, I was like, stop what? I'm not doing anything.
Exactly.
We can call the episode a hagianim.
Oh, how about you call it a hagianim?
Gets horny. No, Summer. See, right there. That's when I do it. It's that little sound. Okay. So an interesting info about Rone. He'd been married before. His wife had died after the Battle of Culloden, and he'd been in prison before being sent to the colony. So this, like, I'm sure I knew it from other reads, but of course, like everything else, I forgot it because I hadn't read it close. Now I've read it closely, and Bob's your uncle. So I will never forget. So up until this moment, or that moment when I read it and wrote it down, I thought that Ronnie Sinclair was like maybe around Bree's age or a little bit older. Holy heck, this guy is at the very least 20 years older than him, right? Her. At the very least 43, 4, around there. At the very least. He could be about Jamie's age, but who knows? It doesn't really matter. But until she spelled it out, did you know he was or think he was that old, Sam?
No. But anyone who has an IE on the end of their name, I automatically think is touched in the head or young.
Okay, so this is going to sound ageist of me, and I apologize, but when I first, again, this is, I don't even know how many times I've read this book, but again, first time closely reading. So when I start the chapter and I learn that this dude is like, not the drawing is later on, but like the making the eyeballs or the hairy eyeball or whatever at Bree, I'm like, dude, get your watch. This is like your overseer. This is like your... Oh, your master. Ginger, I cannot stop, can I? This is like your benefactor. This is your benefactor. This is your benefactor's daughter. Like the one, besides Claire, the one person you should not like be. No eyeballs. Actually, probably even more than that. Probably even more than Claire. Because that's like daddy's daughter's sacred stuff, whatever. When Diana writes that, and I was like, ugh, okay, but it didn't gross me out. I was just like, dude, it didn't gross me out because that's a human thing to do. But I was like, dude, not the high dude's daughter. No, that's wrong. Or just watch out, basically, watch out, especially not in front of her mother, right? Okay. And then Claire's like, oh, he hasn't this. And then she's like, boom, he's been married before, and so he's at least 20 years older. I'm just like, that kind of made me sick. I guess it's kind of ageist, or it's at least the very least reflective of my...
It was time. A different time. 100%,
I agree with you, but I was like... Ugh. And then, okay, so then, and I wasn't even thinking about this, I'm going to jump out of time a little bit. I mean, not literally. Don't worry. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit to the drawing, since Summer already spoiled that for me. Okay.
It's what I do.
Everything. So he's drawing dirty pictures of Bree, or of a woman inspired by Bree. Now that I know he's at least 20 years older, that's disturbing. You can make a hairy eyeball, like, okay, you know, because if you see it, and like, you're human, you're a dude, you got testosterone, I get it. Especially if you don't have a lot of women around, I get it. I don't even blame him for like doing the drawing. And of course, if Bree's the one he literally just saw, it might be inspired by her. But I'm like, I guess it goes back to what Summer said, is just don't do it where it can, there's any chance of being seen ever. I'm sorry. That just really, it didn't bug you?
I don't know.
That's really wrong of me, isn't it?
It bugged me, but here's the thing. The only difference between flirting and sexual harassment is whether or not you find the dude attractive.
I know.
And that's hard to say, and it's not fair, but it's whether or not, I mean, if it's whether or not you're into it, right? That's the difference. So, I mean, if somebody that was super hot was giving you the googly eye, regardless of his age, what if he was like, you know, Jean-Luc Picard, hot older man, balding, giving you the eye, you might be like, hey. But if it was some guy that you found repellent, did you just say our dad? What? You're grossing me out, Ginger.
I didn't know where you were going. I thought you were trying to say Jean-Luc Picard. Yeah.
Nope.
But someone else, like, because you were saying a bald older man, I was like, wait a second, like our dad?
No. I didn't say that. And if you, and let the record show when you listen to this later during editing that I never said that.
I didn't think you were going to say our father, but you were saying like the category.
No, but you sure did.
Okay, sorry. Finish what you were saying.
My point is if you find the dude repellent, regardless of age, it's an unwelcome advance. And you don't want somebody that you don't think is, I don't know, it's, yeah, if you're not into it, you're not into it. And it's going to be something that skeeves you out.
Oh, I'm just going to say, I've had people tell me, not like 20 million. I don't think I know that many people, but I've had
You don't.
There have been people who have told me that they find, and I hope our dad never listens to this, that at various ages, like not like in the last 3 months or anything, but like when we were in our 20s or whatever, that they thought our dad was good looking. And I'm just...
No doubt. Stop.
And I'm just like...
Gross. Stop.
Oh, I don't even know what to say. Thank you? I don't know what to say to that.
Hey. You need to rethink that noise
What's
you just
that?
Made. That was not
was
okay
it?
Either.
Stop it. Because
that's not the reaction I have to somebody telling me they thought my dad was good looking.
It was a sigh, like, awkward sigh, like, yes.
Was
summer.
It? Because you need to rethink. You need to work on your awkward sighs because they sound an awful lot like sex workers.
Sex workers? How many sex workers do you know?
Uh-huh. I'm just saying, like, you work on a 1-900 number.
Although I have been told my voice is like a, what is it? Sex line?
Sex phone operator?
Sex operator. I got two things. Very first time I did my first, like, voiceover for a video, I was told, I got NPR, and I got sex operator. I'm like, thanks a lot, guys. Like,
which are two... Those are two very different voices. So I'm really interested to see what you were voiceovering and how you affected that.
It's pretty unique, isn't it?
Because NPR is very calming, and you speak not really monotonous, but you don't have a large range
in tone.
The tones of your voice, and a sex phone operator is not
okay,
the same.
Okay, we just got a lot more possibilities for titles. They're very scared. Oh, okay. You need to stop that. Hui. Okay. Oh, gosh. So, as I was saying, Ronnie had a wife who had died before Culloden, and he'd been imprisoned before being sent to the colonies. Claire sees Ronnie's interest or quest. She puts it as a quest for gossip. So, when they're there chatting about people who have shown up or watching people, etc., she puts this in a different light. Rather than, as Summer would say, skeezy, she says, or she thinks to herself, I knew what it was like to be lonely. So she definitely feels for Ronnie in this. Regarding Brianna, Claire thinks if Roger didn't come along soon, that Brianna wouldn't be alone for long. Claire thinks, what if he had...
She'll have her pick of the mountain.
Which is Ronnie and maybe this Hodgepile dude, who knows?
Hey, Duncan's not taken yet.
That's true. Okay, that's a spoiler, Summer.
Well, he's not taken.
Correct. I'll go with that. Claire thinks, what if Roger has actually chosen not to come? Brianna, by this point, had stopped speaking about him much, but she could tell that she did long for him still. Megan P. writes, it seems that Brianna and Lizzie fit seamlessly into the day-to-day life on Fraser's Ridge, like it was all meant to be from the start, running errands and contributing to the household all together. And Brianna is adapting quickly, like Claire always does, which is neat to see. Brianna is with Jamie. So now we're scene change. Brianna is with Jamie as he shows her the distillery he's made, even though, you know, it's still in the baby infancy stages. It was nearly 2 miles from their cabin, located, quote, close to Fergus's place, so that Marsali could come up several times a day to keep an eye on the operation, unquote. In return, they had a slightly larger share in the whiskey when it was actually produced than the others on the ridge who had given barley or other things to make the whiskey. Now, as we heard, exactly, the whiskey co-op. So Marsali's actually there. I don't think Fergus is there.
No, just her and Germaine.
And Germaine, yes. And now little Germaine is wanting to chomp. He has a thing in his hand. He's wanting to chomp on a cockroach. And young Ian says, it shouldn't hurt him because he's eating them with his Indian friends, he calls them, with the Tuscarora, yes, before. He says, but locusts are better, especially when smoked.
Blue, blue.
And that's great because I was reading it. As soon as I read it, I was like, okay, summer, or I mean, I could, but I don't typically do it. It's typically you. So I was completely expecting the sound you just made. And the funny thing was, if you read the paragraph where this happens, or paragraphs, it says that Marsali and Brianna made gagging sounds.
Yep. I mean, it's the appropriate response.
Summer's standing right next to Brianna and Marsali. Brilliant. Oh, that made me laugh. Okay. Young Ian upends a bag of barley and two more roaches come out. Germaine goes for it again. They decide to leave the roaches in the whiskey mush. So they've kind of like gone for it. And then like one of them like fries or something in the flames. And one of the bags has spoiled from the damp. And so they scatter the rest of the good barley onto the floor. And then they say it's weather dependent how long it takes for the barley to turn to mush or to get to the next stage. Germaine has taken off again across the clearing. Brianna grabs him and Marsali takes him from her. But because of what he's just gone through, he's got his little thing, his toy taken away from him, his little chewing thing. Whatever he has in his hand right then, he swallows. He's like, I'm not going to let – he, in a way, he's smart, right? He's thinking like, oh, I know what I'll do. I'm not going to let this be taken away from me. I'll put it in the one place that they can't get to it. I'll swallow it. And he does, and then the little bastard chokes.
He's not a bastard. His parents were married.
I know. He's a little asshole. All kids are assholes.
He's a toddler.
Exactly. All toddlers are assholes.
What he really is like a little tiny drunk person.
That's true. That's probably a better way to say it. So Bree takes him and does the Heimlich maneuver, or what will become known as the Heimlich maneuver in the 20th century.
I think we should just start calling it the Fraser Randall maneuver.
And something pops out. Germaine will be okay. Bree looks a little shaky. And Marsali tells her, I thank ye, good sister.
Good sister.
I know. Megan P. writes, I am pleasantly surprised that Marsali and Brianna seem to get along so well. I wasn't sure how those two personalities would mesh. Brianna has such a calming spirit to everyone she encounters. Additionally, Marsali is happily married and embracing her maternal role. They both still have fire within, but it is a soft and crackling ember instead of the roaring blaze they are both capable of when the situation calls for it. I can't get enough of these strong female characters that Diana so effortlessly creates.
I feel...
Now, Summer, tell us about Brianna.
No. I feel...
For those who missed the Comic-Con panel and haven't watched or listened to the episode, tell us about Brianna.
I mean, she's not my favorite. I don't know what else you want me to...
Why?
No, that's fine. Because I don't like her.
Why?
Shut up. I'm not talking about that right now. Okay. What I want to talk about. And I don't hate her. I just said she's not my favorite. She's just not my favorite. But I feel like Marsali has... Oh, I hate that you made me do that.
I wasn't going to say anything. But actually, I was, but you beat me.
Marsali. Okay. So Marsali. Marsali like parsley. I hate you. You and Davina, man. You're working against me today. I feel like she has, like, motherhood has softened her in ways. And I think it's also necessity. Like, I know that she was real hot right out the gate leaving Scotland. You know, headbutting against Claire and Jamie and all the things. But the further she's gotten away from Scotland, the less family she has around her, the only connections that she has, the further they get away from Scotland, is Fergus
and Jamie and Claire. That is her family. And now that it's not just her, it's her and her husband and now a baby or a toddler, you know, they need as much help as they can get. And you don't want to like piss on that. You know, there comes a point when pride is not more important than having things and getting the help you need.
Totally. Young Ian asks Brianna where she'd learned that move. And she says from Claire, her mom. Now, this whole time, all I can think of is, okay, is he doing okay? He's not going to die? Okay, fine. Tell me about the damn thing he swallowed. I don't care about the rest. Once he's okay, shove him away. I want to know what happened, what it was. It was a button. Quote, lopsided circle, crudely carved from wood, but indisputably a button with a long shank and holes bored for thread, unquote. They ruled it out being Fergus's bandy.
What? You want to try that again?
They ruled it out from being Fergus's button. He's too much of a dandy to wear something like that.
I love that.
I know, right?
He's a dandy.
He's too funny. Jamie put it in his sputtern. He's like, ah, oh, it's okay. I'll hold on to it. He says he'll ask about it, but they end up stopping at Kenny Lindsay's on the way to the cabin. So they say that they'll ask there. Well, Kenny Lindsay isn't home. Duncan had come to get him, they learn, from his wife. And they asked the wife about the button. No, it wasn't from her. It wasn't from him.
I love how everyone sees the button and they're like, oh, no, 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 no. My husband's buttons are so much nicer than those. I just made them and I put them all on his jacket. And what I liked about it is she's like, oh, no, no. He just carved me these buttons and I just replaced all of them on his jacket. like buttons are so...
We're so button happy
now. Such a big deal that everyone knew right. Can I tell you that if somebody came up to me with a button, I wouldn't have been like, I would not have been able to immediately say that is not my button. I mean, unless it was made out of, I can't think of something it could be made out of that I could instantly say that's not my button, because I would be like, rubies. I don't know. Let me go check. let me go through all my clothes and see what's missing buttons.
All of our plastic and metal stuff. Yeah, I think most people wouldn't know unless it was a shirt, you know, something that they knew and loved and or wore a lot or didn't wear a lot, but, you know, it was very expensive and thus they have committed it to memory or something like that. So after she establishes, no, it's not my husband's button, she looks at Bree and tries to play matchmaker by mentioning Kenny's brother up the way. I'm just knocking him out of the park tonight, aren't I? So she mentions the gathering at Helicon. I hope it's pronounced Helicon. And Jamie says, no, we'll not be going to the gathering at Helicon. He says he doesn't think the button is necessarily important, but it could be something. Then they bring up Hodgepile. And if it were someone from the Ridge, okay, I had to read this a few times to like kind of circle back. So they bring up Hodgepile in the context of this unknown person and the button, because it's an unknown person. The button's not necessarily that problematic. The problem is that if it were someone who belonged on the Ridge, or even someone who was visiting, but someone who was known to someone on the Ridge, then they'd either recognize the button or claim the button. Although admittedly, they've only spoken to like two people. But even if it was someone who did not belong on the Ridge, and it was if it were someone from the Ridge, and to have a button made of whatever found so close to the whiskey still, to have someone from the Ridge know about it, you know, that's not shocking to them, because a lot of people on the Ridge know where that whiskey still is. But if it's someone who does not belong on the Ridge, or someone who is not from there, if it were an innocent unknown person, quote, but a man come for any innocent reason would stop at a house for a bit of food and drink, and I'd hear of it the same day, unquote. And it wouldn't be a native or a Tuscaroran either, as they don't use buttons. So we got a little, this is important. So now it's gone from someone asking about Jamie to someone being around, some unknown person being around the still. So that's a little, and the person also asked about whiskey, right? They asked about Jamie and they asked about the whiskey. And now there's this button without its owner around the whiskey still. So it's a little bit scary. Or not scary. It's a little bit funny. Megan P. writes, Scots and their whiskey. I'm fairly certain that anywhere Jamie Fraser ends up, illegal whiskey production and distribution will follow. Just once, I'd love to see Jamie get to let loose, get a nice strong whiskey buzz and have a good time. So as they come to the cabin, they see Claire in her garden. Brianna says, Innisfree. Jamie's confused. He's like, wait, what? And Bree says, it's part of a poem that Frank used to say when Claire would come in from her garden. He said that she'd live out there if she could, and he'd joke that she'd leave them both one day and find a place where she could live by herself with nothing but her plants. So the part of the poem that Brianna reads or recites is, I will arise and go now and go to Innisfree, and a small cabin build there of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honeybee, and live alone in the bee-loud glade. So this is, it's Irish and it's by William Butler Yeats, so W.B. Yeats. And we'll provide a link to the full poem and a page about the poet as well. And the funny thing is, funny, not really funny, but poignant thing is that although Frank had said that in jest, but was it in jest? I mean, really think about what happened. She actually had left them in the end. Of course, it was after Frank had died. But she'd left Bree. Jamie looks at Claire, picking her beans. Quote, not alone after all, she thought, but the small tightness stayed in her chest, not quite an ache. Unquote. Megan P. writes, I feel complete adoration for the quiet, supportive presence Jamie provided for Brianna as she shared that poem and memory of Frank as they stood and watched Claire, whom they both love so much. Scene change. Whiskey tasting. Yeah, exactly. Kenny Lindsay, who is now back from wherever he was, is part of the group. And he says, yeah, it's strong, but it's better than last time. This one doesn't quite take the hide off your tongue, he says. And he says they already have a buyer for a cask. And they have a price. And they had a promise of 800 pounds of barley. They'll also give a cask to each house on the ridge, 2 to Nacognoweto, and they'll keep 1 back to age. And they'll take, Jamie's going to send a dozen for the gathering at Mount Helicon with Duncan. Although they can't make it for the gathering, Duncan would take the whiskey for them and sell it. Brianna tries to ask if they should be selling, if they really should be, if it was really a good right thing to do to sell it to the Indians due to their low tolerance for alcohol. Claire, and she looks to her mom for help because the people who look at her like, wait, what? We're not giving away for free, little girl. Claire, though, can't help. She says that the term alcoholic is not a noun yet. So she understands and probably agrees with Bree's frustrations, but having been in the past for a lot longer than Bree has, she knows that there are some battles you are not going to win. They ask Duncan to check at the gathering to see if anyone knows about a hodgepile. And then Bree says, you know, could you ask about Roger? And then Claire puts in about Joseph Weems, Lizzie's dad. As the chapter comes to a close, Kenny Lindsay asks if Bree is what they call her, Jamie and Claire's daughter. And they say, yeah. Why? Jamie says, quote, it's a Scots word. A brie is a great disturbance.
Didn't we already know that, though? Didn't he already say that? In the last book, when she came back and he said, what did you name her? And she said, Brianna. And then he said she was saying it wrong. And then I thought when she said brie that he was like, I thought that was in a previous book. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again.
We're all wrong at times.
And that was chapter 43. We'll be doing 2 chapters next week. We'll be doing chapter 44 entitled Three-Cornered Conversation and chapter 45 entitled 50-50. That was really hard for me to read.
I can't really explain why.
Numbers are hard.
The number of the chapter is 2 digits, but the name of the chapter is 2 words spelled out, and it totally threw me. Good Lord.
She did it. Oh, my goodness.
And as always, if you'd like to join us to continue the conversation, go to www.outlanderpod.com/groups or just the singular.
Nope.
Group.
You did the same thing last week.
Group. Just splice it all together. It'll be fun. It'll be like, group.
If you love our show and are entertained by it, please consider supporting us on Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/outlanderpod. There are also a number of free ways to help support our show. And wow, that was very energetic, Ginger. The most important way you can support us is to help spread the word. Tell your Outlander-loving friends and family about the Outlander podcast.
You officially have a third voice.
What is that?
You have NPR, sex phone operator, and PBS pledge drive.
Nuh-uh.
That was PBS pledge drive. That was you telling me I was not only going to get support great programming, but I was going to get a copy of Josh Groban's video and CD.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. Tune in next time and we'll hear Ginger's fourth voice. Thank you guys so much. Have a great week. And we can't wait for our next episode.
Spoiler alert. It's her butt.
That's just gross.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlander Pod.